This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
May the 18th be with you on a Monday morning. Welcome on in to the week. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. That's Kelly Bidlin. Don't worry, Gil Alexander will finally return from his trip to wherever, parts unknown.
Around the country.
On Tuesday. And we've got an awesome show lined up for you to start your week as the conference finals are officially set in the NBA. The Phillies back to 500 in Major League Baseball. A long shot wins the PGA Championship and Game 7 on the ice in Buffalo to preview later on tonight. But the story right now, Kelly Bidlin, is what the Cleveland Cavaliers did last night to the Detroit Pistons in a Game 7. I'm not sure I've seen a team not post at home in a Game 7 with a trip to the conference finals on the line. Quite like what we saw from Detroit last night. 125-94, Cleveland was catching four. They do cover, according to my math. We go over the total, by the way. A total that dropped and continued to drop as we got closer to tip-off, closing at 203.5 in game early as we got off to a super clunky start. That thing was as low as 195.5 early in the first quarter. And in the end, we go over every single total that was out there for the most part. And the Cleveland Cavaliers have punched their ticket to take on the Knicks in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, man, you hadn't seen a performance like that at home to possibly go to the conference finals since 2 days beforehand.
Yeah,
Man, this series, unfortunately, I'd really hate to say it, but this series really became all of, like, who was going to lose the, like, who wanted to lose a game less, it felt like, every single time. Like, if every, these last three games on the road, we see the road team win game five, game six, game seven. I mean, honestly, none of them were very pretty. The last two, just complete domination. Detroit on Cleveland home court, Cleveland on Detroit home court. And this Cavs team that you saw last night was not the Cavs team you saw 2 days before.
No,
that's for sure.
And more importantly, to your point about the road team winning the last three games of this series, the first three games of the series, it was all home teams.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even close. The road teams didn't have a prayer. So I'm not really sure what flipped the switch for these teams to figure out how to win on the road. But some interesting numbers. Last three seasons were 8-3 to the over in game sevens. So 4-0 this year in game sevens, already to the over. Before that, we were on a 42-24 run to the under. But lately, game seven's been overs because the market adjusts people. Yeah. I think that's the thing that everyone gets caught up in with these trends. They go, well, you know, this trend is hitting at such a rapid rate. Yeah, because there's been slow movement behind the counter to adjust the number. We've now come back so far the other way. The tax that you're paying on a potential under in a game seven in every sport, which we'll get to later on with the hockey game tonight, that has been over-adjusted as well. But hockey's a bit of a different animal. Now, in the last 25 game sevens in the non-bubble, home teams are 11-14 straight up. That's tied for the 21st game, worst 25-game stretch in history. Since the bubble, we've had 20 NBA game sevens. The home team, 9-11. That's via Evan Abrams of the Action Network.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely crazy that in a pivotal game with so much on the line, where role players are thought to be able to play better at home, for some reason, it doesn't work that way. The last few years in a game seven, I don't know how you quantify it. But to me, the story coming out of this game isn't how good Cleveland looked. It's Detroit.
Yeah.
And Cade Cunningham specifically, 13 points, playoff career low for him. He only had 1 point in the second half. Okay. 1 point in the second half of a game seven, when he is the guy who makes everything go for the Pistons offense, that's unacceptable. But big picture, Kelly, it's more a look at the front office for the Pistons, who were the one seed all season long in the East. And at the trade deadline, you have one team in this matchup that added James Harden and Dennis Schroeder and Keon Ellis. And the other team, what did the Pistons do? Kevin Huerter, who didn't play? Mm-hmm. I think the front office has to look themselves in the mirror and realize they failed this team and did not capitalize on an opportunity.
100%. A lot of us were saying it throughout the course of the regular season. I think the one where I'll give them a bit of an excuse is because we've seen this. We've seen this with the Thunder recently. We've seen this with other teams. Minnesota jumps out of, let's see what this roster can do together. Houston Rockets jump out. Let's see what this roster can do before we go and make the decision of whether we need to add to it or not. I think a lot of us thought that by the halfway through this season that you'd seen enough of what this were going to have glaring holes when it came to shooting and offensive potential when you got to the playoffs. That type of roster can work in the regular season. Can it work in the playoffs, though? And I know there's one guy we want to specifically talk about, but I'm not going to crush them just because we saw Houston kind of go through something similar, right? Okay. Young roster. Okay, let's go add Kevin Durant, right? Thunder, same thing, right? They had all those draft picks. Mm-hmm. Is this core good enough? This core is good enough. We don't need to go add anybody else. So I give them a little bit of leeway there, but I don't know, Dustin. Like, when so many people from the sidelines seem to think that you're going to have offensive issues come the playoffs, and then when there are players out there, like, I mean, things changed completely during halfway through the season for the Utah Jazz and what their future was going to be. But Lauri Markkanen was very much linked to this team. And if you could have acquired him, added another young threat next to Cade Cunningham, like, man, you got to wonder about how this season might be different and how the next 5-10 years could be different.
Yeah, Markkanen's one of the names that's been rumored to be on the top of the list for the Detroit Pistons, as is Trey Murphy from the Pelicans. You know, Tobias Harris, Jalen Duren, Asar Thompson. Those are three starters. Mm-hmm. They combined for 17 points, 5 of 20 from the field. Duren completely disappeared for the postseason. He had one good game in game 6 and then didn't post again in game 7, really. Had decent rebounding numbers. Asar Thompson, people, you know, you talk about his defense and the impact he makes there. At this point, he's Tony Allen. I know he's a kid. I know he's still developing, but you're relying on him to add something offensively. There is no offensive game. And then Tobias Harris, for the run that he was on, where he was helping lift this team throughout the postseason, he completely turtled when it mattered late in this series. But more importantly, when I look back on game 7, I don't understand what the game plan was for Detroit. Early in the game, both teams were super clunky, coming down, settling for bad shots, forcing things up. But Detroit was playing at the pace that Cleveland wanted to. And I didn't understand that because of everything we just listed.
Yeah.
They have so many offensive woes. Why are you trying to run up and down with the Cavaliers, trying to jump them? Play your game. Slow it down. ISO ball for Cade. Get him good looks at the basket. And more importantly, get to the free throw line. There's a lot of conspiracy theorists out there, Kelly, who want to tell you, well, Cleveland, they're getting the better whistle. They're getting to the charity stripe more. No, no, no. They are using a game plan to shoot free throws, and that way that they can jump up their lead against Detroit. Detroit failed to get to the free throw line. It wasn't that Cleveland was getting a better whistle. It's that Cleveland had that as part of their game plan. And all of this, to me, is failures in coaching. And I haven't even gotten to the fact that I saw Duncan Robinson defending Donovan Mitchell on key possessions last night. And then Paul Reed. Why was Paul Reed not playing in the first half when he's one of the few guys you have that can actually create some offense? I think JB Bickerstaff, he got exposed in this series.
I mean, he did. We talked about this on Friday, right? It's also not the first time we said that about JB Bickerstaff, too. You know, great coach, he's had problems in the playoffs for sure. We talked about this on Friday with Paul Reed, right? It was like the game plan of we're only going to put him in when we're down or trailing or late in the game. It's very, very, very odd to me. Going forward, Tobias Harris, I don't really know that we can, I don't know if we can crush him. This is what he does. He's age 34 now, I think, in the league. He's a professional scorer. He comes in, he's going to give you 15 points per game. He was definitely riding too high earlier in the series, for sure. We expected a drop off that game. I do think what they found with Danis Jenkins this year was great. He'll be a piece for them going forward. Duren got exposed a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Asar Thompson, you and I were talking a little bit before the show. The Thompson brothers, this is going to become a massive issue with because they are so super talented, so athletic, so good defensively, and the lack of offensive games, you just can't. It's another one of part of what's going to make Detroit a great regular season team that struggle in the playoffs. You cannot go with playoff chess matchups that you've got to figure out, and one guy you can identify cannot hurt us offensively at all, especially when they're a wing player. They're not all we're talking about, Rudy Gobert. So I don't really know if you can. What's the long term viability of Cade Cunningham, Jalen Duren, and Asar Thompson all on the court together? That's a lot of lack of shooting out there.
No, Cade Cunningham's a single mother, man. He's washing and drying the dishes. Yes. He has to put them away. No one's helping him cook dinner. Like, he is doing everything for this team offensively. Now on the other side, we'll give the Cavs their props. They did win a game seven. It's the seventh straight year, though, by the way, of a one seed being eliminated before the conference finals. 2019 was the last time we had both one seeds in the conference finals. How about Jared Allen, I should say, game sevens? Against Toronto, he had 22, 19, and 3. Detroit, 23, and 7. He seems to save his best for these big spots. As Cleveland's going to their ninth Eastern Conference final in history, but it's their first since 2019 and the first without LeBron James since 1992. Shout out to Mark Price and Brad Daugherty there. The fourth team to make the Eastern Conference final after playing in back-to-back game sevens in their series. 03 Mavs, 08 Celtics who won the title, and 2020 Nuggets, the last three to do so. They're plus 215 dogs in the series against the Knicks. New York's minus 265. We'll dive more into this series throughout the show, but as a Knicks fan and as someone who has futures on both these teams, New York to win the title at 15-1, the Cavs to win the East at 6-1, and to win the title at 11-1, I would tell you that this is mispriced.
This is, yeah, I was very interested to see what this price was going to be. I actually thought it was going to be higher on the Knicks side.
Really?
Yeah, I really did. After their recent run, I thought they were going to be like a $3 favorite.
Okay, they played three times in the regular season. Two early, one to start the season on the opener, one on Christmas Day. The Knicks won both of those. Then following the James Harden trade, Cleveland won. I think Cleveland is a more talented team. Now, I know we question what they have between the ears, and I love the Knicks. I love what they've been. But let's also be fair to what they've also been as their identity all season long. The second things are going good, they fall back to the pack. They are not a consistent top-tier performing organization. Maybe they've turned it on in the playoffs. Maybe they needed these games to matter more to show us what they're made of. But I think Cleveland's capable of winning this one. I'd like this game to go over 5.5 total games.
Okay, I like that. I do think we probably get a series here. I lean to the Knicks. I did a Knicks game one and series bet is what I did. Minus 160.
All right, more on that. Plus a game seven on the ice and a huge long shot wins the PGA Championship over the weekend. That's on the other side of a numbers game.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Yes, indeedy. It is a numbers game. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. He's Kelly Bidlin. We'll be with you here in the AM. Don't worry. Gil Alexander returns from parts unknown on Tuesday. You'll get the full compliment of Gil. Is there a big tennis event this weekend that he couldn't miss?
French Open starts next week.
Thank God. Thank God. I respect the hustle. Him and Zach betting tennis every single week.
Oh, it's crazy.
I find it really difficult to, and we touched on it last week, and I got a lot of hate in the old mentions about these individual sports. At least with golf, it makes sense to me because there's top 20 and top 10 and all these matchups. It's a little bit easier. You have 4 days of sweating out this one bet. The matchups, every single event for these tennis things, I don't know how they do it. I give them a lot of credit because that's a different level of grind.
On all hours of the night, right? I mean, that's really the biggest thing for me. I like to watch mainly what I'm betting on, and so many of these tennis tournaments are just over, you know, over in Europe, over in Asia. Like it is tough to track this stuff all the time.
Now, do people assume that you know tennis because you sit here with Gil every day? Because I tell you, people, as I was Patrick Maher's sidekick for a decade, people would come up to me and start talking horse racing.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, he knows horse racing. I'm just there. And I ask him questions because I don't know how it works. And like 10 years later, I still just, so people go, oh yeah, you must. I'm like, no, that's him. Do people assume that you just know tennis because of Gil?
It's a great question. I think 5 years of being on this show now, I think the audience knows pretty well that I don't know anything.
Pretty open about it. All right, well, a guy who knows baseball is Greg Hoops Peterson, even though his nickname is Hoops because he also knows college basketball. He's like Bo Jackson. He knows everything. And we're going to give you Greg's Fab Five in Major League Baseball on a Monday. As Greg joins us now via the Progressive Guest Line, you can check out his podcast I was going to say Coast to Coast Hoops. It's the baseball betting show with Greg Peterson, available wherever you get your podcast. On top of that, write-ups on the daily over at VSiN.com, breaking down the baseball. And Greg joins us now. So, Greg, I want to begin with your first game, where it's the Phillies and the Reds. And you're going to look to the total. It's Andrew Painter against Nick Lodolo. Total in the game, by the way, is up to 10. Phillies minus 131, Cincinnati plus 108 on the road. But how about the Phillies back to one game above 500? All they've done is win every single series since Don Mattingly has taken over. They've won 20 games in a row versus teams above 500. Now they take on Cincinnati. What are you going to do in this matchup?
Donnie Baseball is things rocking and rolling. By the way, going back to what you were talking about earlier, maybe because I love these random day games and because I love the random college basketball games in Hawaii, because I love just games in general, super early, super late, that maybe I should dive into tennis, because that's right up my wheelhouse right there. But that said, when it comes to this game, this is also up my wheelhouse because I do like the under in this game. Nick Lodolo, rough first two starts of the season. He's rocking an ERA of an 8.68. We saw what he was able to do last year, though. 3.33 ERA, less than two walks per nine innings. It's taken him a little bit of time coming off the injury list. That happens for a lot of pitchers. I think that he's going to be able to turn a little bit of a corner here. Keep in mind, the Reds through the first 4 weeks of the season were actually number one in terms of bullpen ERA. It's toilet bowled a little bit. I don't think that they're as good as they were the first 4 weeks of the season. Now they're outside the top 22 in terms of bullpen ERA. I don't think that they're this bad either. And then for the Phillies, Andrew Painter has pitched a little bit better than his north of 6 ERA would indicate. More like 482 fielding dependent. He's got some solid swing and miss stuff. He's not really killing himself with regards to walks as well. And for the Reds, they're much like the Philadelphia Phillies. Both of these teams really rely upon two guys. Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper have been incredible. And Schwarber, 20 home runs already. That's insane. And then on the flip side for the Reds, Ellie De La Cruz along with Sal Stewart. If it weren't for those two guys, they would have no offense. So you neutralize those two guys on each side, you're able to have yourself a bunch of other guys in lineup that aren't doing a ton. So I do like that under of 9.5, even seeing a 10 or 2 out there as well.
Okay, I like it. Let's keep cruising on the Greg's Fab Five. Reminder, this is just five bets that Danny and I choose from Greg Peterson. All of his bets can be found at VSiN.com in his daily articles, and all the bets that we do here at VSiN can be found over there. Mets at Nationals. I know you're involved in this one. Mets minus 135 road favorite. Nationals plus 121 on the comeback. Total set at 10. Where are you looking here?
Well, Christian Scott has a good ERA. It's below a 3.40. You just have to fear the walks issues with him. He's giving out over five walks per nine innings. Command has not been his forte. And for Jake Irvin, right now he does have a 5.92 ERA. That's obviously less than tremendous. Fielding independent is more than a full point lower. And he's actually getting a career high about 9.5 strikeouts per nine innings. Additionally, for the Washington Nationals, even if you do think that there might be a little bit of disadvantage with regards to starting pitching, you've got a Mets lineup that, even though they were able to get going a little bit more in the Subway Series over the weekend, they're still a bottom six team in terms of run creation. Really, aside from Juan Soto, MJ Melendez, nobody in that lineup's giving over a 310 on base. For the Nationals, meanwhile, they've been a top two team in terms of run creation thus far this season. It's been incredible with them having James Wood, CJ Abrams, being able to get things rolling. They've been hitting lefties much better than righties, so that's something that you do want to be taking note of, but still, guys like down Lyle, Brady, I was starting to give them a little bit more production. I think that the Nationals have a good chance of being able to get to Scott, get him out of this game very early. So I do like the Nationals on the money line. And with Irvin being a little bit more improved than that bullpen would indicate, or than that ERA would indicate, that total of 10, I do like the total to the under.
Greg Peterson is our guest, Progressive Guest Line, VSiN baseball betting analyst, also host of the Baseball Betting Show, available wherever you get your podcast at GUnit_81. Next game on the card, and we're somewhat like-minded here, Minnesota hosts Houston. Kendry Rojas on the bump for the Twinkies, minus 115. Houston throwing Tatsuya Imai at minus 104 odds. He hates America. Not in like an anti-America way, but he doesn't like living here. He has not gotten acclimated, and it shows with the results. He's a minus 104 slight dog here. 9.5 is the total. Which direction are you going to look, Greg?
Yep, I'm going to be in on the Minnesota Twins, and I can't say that I'm a stan of the Twins. I sort of saw the regression that we're seeing right now happening, but that's it with Imai. You mentioned it. 9.9 walks per nine innings, and I mean, it's not necessarily that he's had a tough time with regards to just acclimating in general. It's actually the rules as well, because one thing that I've been hearing from Amaya. And the reason why he struggled so much is that he hasn't been able to get down the pitch clock as well, which we recall a lot of guys 3 to 4 years ago, they had a little bit of a difficult time with that. They've got the pitch clock here in the States. They don't have that so much in like Japan, KBO, some of those other foreign leagues. So I think that that's had a little bit to play with it as well. And let's say that these two starters, because you've got Kendry Rojas, who's going to be the opener, and then Simeon Woods Richardson, who's going to be the bulk guy. Let's say that they play even up. Astros dead last in terms of bullpen ERA. Like, man, they have absolutely no bullpen pitching whatsoever. Josh Hader going on the injury list has just destroyed this team. And now with having Carlos Correa out as well, that lineup is going down the toilet bowl as well. So this total of 9.5 to 10, I honestly think is a little bit too high. I think that we see positivity with both Amaya along with Woods Richardson, who's going to be the bulk guy. So do like the under, but I took the Twins at -110 on the money line.
All right, Greg, keep on moving here. Rangers at the Rockies tonight. Seeing Rangers about -147 on the money line. Rockies +132, but you're looking at the total here.
Yep, I'm looking at that total over. Mostly seeing 10s out there. We've been seeing a few 9.5s pop up as well. If you've got a 9.5, all the better, because with Jose Quintana, he's been able to give you a sub-4 ERA. That said, the fielding independent is well above a 5. 4.3 strikeouts and 4.3 walks per 9 innings. And when you're getting less than 4.5 strikeouts per 9 innings and you're pitching at Coors Field, it's a very, very dangerous game. Now, the Rangers, they have been second worst in the league in terms of run creation. They're averaging more than a full run per game, more though away from home rather than at home. I feel like a lot of people don't understand just how much that ballpark in Arlington is suppressing offense. And Mackenzie Gore has just not been good away from home as well. He's got over a 6 ERA. He's been giving up 6 walks for 9 innings in his road starts as well. So I think that this has runs written all over it. For the Rockies, it's been a little bit up and down with regards to their offense, but also we've seen the bullpen go downward a little bit as well. Firstly, with regards to side, I took the Rangers at +money on the run line. I do like that total of 9.5 to 10 to the over.
All right, Greg, a little bit of time left here. Let's Crisco it up here. Rub it all over your body. Squeeze one more in. Dodgers, Padres, King versus Yamamoto. San Diego +128 home dogs, -155 with the Dodgers. Total 7.5. What are you going to do?
And with the Dodgers, they certainly got things rolling against the LA Angels. It feels like they are just the get-right team for everyone in all of baseball right now. But I think that the Padres send the Dodgers back to reality with Michael King giving a 2.63 ERA. He's looked much more of himself this year than he did a season ago when he was banged up. And for the Padres, 3 ERA with regards to their bullpen in their home games as well. They've been really good out of the bullpen. The Dodgers, they themselves have been a top 10 team in terms of bullpen ERA as well. I know that Yoshinobu Yamamoto has not necessarily quite been himself this season. I think they'll be able to bounce back a little bit. Padres coming off of Sunday Night Baseball, so a little bit of inclement travel, but I'm still willing to take them at +money on the money line. But I think that both of these starters give you a good start here. I think that Yamamoto, who's always had a career better away from home rather than at home, does a good job holding down a Padres lineup that has had some tough times scoring. So 7.5, like that total to the under. I do like the Padres on the money line.
That's Greg Peterson. Check out the Baseball Betting Show wherever you get your podcasts, or read them every day over VSiN.com. Appreciate the time as always, Greg.
Always appreciate you guys. Thank you.
All right, when we return, we'll stay with Major League Baseball for a moment. Over the weekend, I added a 20-1 and a 50-1 in the awards market from two players from one team, and I think a 5-1 may be worth looking at. I'll throw that Kelly's way.
All right.
Coming up next on A Numbers Game.
VSiN, the sports betting network.
Yeah, buddy. May the 18th be with you on a Monday. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. That is Kelly Bidlin. This is A Numbers Game, VSiN, the sports betting network. A lot going on in the world of sports. We got Game 1, Western Conference Finals tonight. Game 1 of the East will be on Tuesday. Major League Baseball, full plethora of Monday options for you on the old betting board. We'll break down that coming up in our next segment on the show. And of course, golf with our next guest, as the Byron Nelson is right around the corner this upcoming weekend. Kelly told me during the break it's his favorite event of the year. So we'll talk about that and more with Wes Reynolds. You know him, VSiN betting analyst, the write-ups every single week, breaking down the golf over at VSiN.com. You can hear him on Long Shots alongside Kelly Bidlin and Matt Brown, wherever you get your podcasts. breaking down the PGA Tour, and Wes joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Before we get to all that, let's look back on last night quickly, Wes, as Cleveland dismantles the Detroit Pistons 125-94. Cleveland was catching four. Total got as low as 203.5, and now the Cavaliers are in the Eastern Conference Final against the Knicks. Do you say that that series and the way it went down at the end was Cleveland delivering, or is that Detroit just showing that they weren't ready for the fight?
Probably a little bit of both, Dustin, because I do think Cleveland has kind of been in these series before where that core is a little bit more experienced playing together in the playoffs, whereas Detroit, this was their first time, and we mentioned it even before the playoffs started, this is their first time being kind of the target because they were the number one seed in the East. So, you know, were they ready for this moment? And, you know, they had a lot of ups and downs, and I think you kind of saw some flaws with the team. Cade Cunningham, obviously going to be like an all-NBA player for years to come, but even he has improvements to make. He could be a little bit better shooter. Detroit needs, I think, some more offense consistently around him because you got guys whose offense really comes and goes with Asar Thompson, with Jalen Duren, even Tobias Harris, who has been pretty consistent. Not a lot of offense last night, so it feels like Cade Cunningham has to do it all himself, whereas Cleveland, I think it can be a little bit more evenly distributed. You know, Mobley, Harden, Donovan Mitchell, Strus off the bench. Sam Merrill was obviously huge last night. So it wasn't really surprising. It was surprising the margin. It was surprising that in a game seven, you know, we kind of had that dud of a finish where it was a 30-point blowout, but not surprising necessarily that Cleveland advanced.
Wes, we got game one of the Eastern Conference Finals tomorrow night, 8 o'clock Eastern, Cavs at the Knicks. Knicks anywhere between 6.5 and 7.5 point favorites, 216 to 216.5 total out there right now. Any thoughts on game one for that series or any series bets there before we turn to the Western Conference Finals tonight?
Yeah, Kelly, it would be Knicks or pass in game one. I think we've kind of seen that rested team, that the rest actually does matter in game number one of the series. We kind of saw it earlier with the in the Knicks Sixers series, where the Sixers come off that seven game and then they had to play like 2 days later and got absolutely blown out in game number one in the Garden. I could see it happening again. I think the number's about right at 6.5, but it would be Knicks or pass for me. I think that this is probably going to be, you know, a Knicks win in the series, but I don't think it's going to be a sweep. I know when you look at what you saw last and you become kind of a prisoner of the moment, you're like, oh my God, the Knicks are going to sweep these guys. Like, this series was an absolute mess up and down between Cleveland and Detroit. Like, neither of them really looked particularly strong coming out of that series, but I don't know. Dustin, I think, can speak from experience as a Knicks fan. There's going to be at least one game where the Knicks kind of blow it, right? Where they have the game on ice. That's just what they do. They blow a game and it's like, oh my God, how did they blow this game? You know, how are they down in the series at one point? Or how is this series not closed out? But that's just going to happen. I think the Knicks in six, probably. It could go seven, but I think it's kind of opened up for New York. And if they continue to shoot like the Golden State Warriors of years past, yeah, then they're going to win. Then they're going to win the East. That's just the way it is. Like, they haven't missed a three, it seems, in like 2 or 3 weeks. So, you know, I think the series, though, is going to be more competitive than maybe a lot of people think.
Okay, I'm going to throw this at both you guys because it blew my mind. The last time the New York Knicks lost a basketball game, what was the date on the calendar? I want you to think about it. What was the date? I'll tell you who's closest.
Oh, man.
April
17th. No, that's too early. April 22nd.
22nd for Kelly?
Yeah.
What are we guessing?
I'm going to say April 20th because they lost the one game against the Hawks.
Kelly wins. It's April 23rd. You're both pretty close. April 20th, 25 days ago, yeah, the last time the Knicks lost a game. But I'm with you, Wes. I think that is totally mispriced. This is closer than those numbers indicate, with the Knicks minus 265 and Cleveland plus 215. Wes Reynolds is our guest, VSiN betting analyst at Wes Reynolds 1. You can find him over on X. Let's talk about tonight, Oklahoma City and San Antonio. Thunder minus 260 favorites in the series, plus 210 with San Antonio. The games market, the series price, that's what you're looking at here, Wes. What are you going to do with the Thunder and the Spurs?
Yeah, that's what I absolutely played, Dustin. I played over 5.5 games, -160. It's a little juicy, but this playoffs, this whole playoffs altogether in a holistic sense, like, it's had its moments, but we even saw last night, a lot of these games, they've been duds and they've been real disappointments. So this playoffs just in general needs some juice. I think they're going to get it in this series. Because this is the first of a many round fight that we think is going to be over the years, because no two teams are, I think, positioned better from a roster standpoint than San Antonio and Oklahoma City. Like, this might be the Western Conference Finals for like the next 5 or 7 years. I would favor Oklahoma City in the series just because they've been there, done that. This is like the Spurs. This is their first title shot, shall we say. You know, we're their first crack at bat against the Goliath of the West, really. I think that this is going to go at least 6 and potentially 7. I think we're getting a great series here between these two. It ultimately comes down to who's got the best unit on the floor. Spurs defense, as good as it is, it's not as good as the Thunder defense. That's the best unit on the floor. That's when it's going to move them on, I think, to the finals and eventually the championship. And I think the depth of the Thunder a little bit. The Spurs are deep. The Thunder are just wildly deep. It's a different guy every night. You know, now you're going to get AJ Mitchell perhaps at some point in this series, who's been an absolute star in the playoffs in the replacement of J-Dub. He's going to be like the 7th, 8th guy in the rotation again.
Yep.
That shows you how deep that these guys are. You know, it's going to be Mitchell. It's going to be McCain. It's going to be Isaiah Joe one night. It's Caruso one night. It's J-Will one night. So the Thunder, nobody can match up to the depth, but I do think that we're at least going 6, so I laid the over 5.5.
Yeah, I am totally with you on that one, Wes. It is, I will not be shocked if maybe it's a little early and the Spurs are able to steal this series. I've got some OKC Western Conference tickets I'm just going to be riding, but I did bet the over 5.5 with you. That is actually my favorite series bet so far in the playoffs. I don't even think it's close. PGA Championship. The Long Shots group chat was quiet over the weekend, so I don't really think I have to ask about Aaron Ryan or how it went for you, because it wasn't great for me either, buddy. Takeaways from this tournament, what can we take out of it and look forward to with, I don't know, any of these golfers, whether it's Aaron Ryan or somebody else?
Well, first credit to Aaron Rye, because he went out and took it. It's like, okay, yep. Who's going to take this thing? Because that leaderboard was so condensed and nobody was really standing out. And then Aaron Rye went and took it. So you've got to give him the credit. He absolutely earned it. He didn't backdoor into it. He went out and took it. When you've got Jon Rahm and Ludwig Aubert, it's like, okay, the cream is going to rise to the top, because that's what we usually see in the majors. And they didn't really meet the moment. Especially Ludwig Aubert, like, who I had, who was my nearest pursuer, didn't really meet the moment. Credit Aaron Rye. Amidst all these guys, it was a real weird leaderboard. You had guys that had not won on the PGA Tour, Alex Smalley, Matty Schmid, and those guys. I guess the takeaway is that maybe Justin Thomas is back. He, of course, posted the 65 early on Sunday, was 5 under, and there were probably people making some bets. It's like, oh, man, this score may stand. He's a leader in the clubhouse, you know. Maybe take him at 25 to 1. He came back from that surgery in the offseason, and I think maybe he's finally back in contention where he can be an elite player again. So that was my takeaway. Other than that, I thought it was a fun event. Not fun from a betting standpoint for me personally, but I like the fact that the course was kind of a test and it wasn't, you know, easy for these guys. And Aaron Rye, salute to him. He is now a major champion.
Apparently the PGA Championship is going to go the U.S. Open route and basically make those two events the Daytona and Talladega of golf, with just being absolutely reckless for everyone to be involved. He's Wes Reynolds. Check out his write-up this week coming up in just a couple days here on the Byron Nelson. That'll be available midweek at VSiN.com, and listen to him on Long Shots alongside Kelly Bidlin and Matt Brown, wherever you get your podcasts. Wes, thanks as always for the time. I'm sure we'll chat soon, my friend.
You bet, guys. Thank you.
Awesome stuff from Wes there. If you missed that conversation, any other chat during the show, like Greg Hoops Peterson earlier, you can go back and download this show and every VSiN show wherever you get your podcast. Still to come on the program, conversation with VSiN managing editor and baseball analyst Adam Burke in the next hour. And we'll hit the baseball card coming up next as well, as I have a couple pitcher props that I am feeling. We'll share them coming up next right here on ANG. We'll be right back.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back at it on ANG. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. That's Kelly Bidlin. Do not fret, my friends. Gil Alexander will be returning mañana on the program.
I think so. I haven't heard from him.
Oh, really?
I haven't talked to him in a few days.
Not one vacation text?
No. I did talk to him middle last week.
Was there any, hey, I'm out of the loop, I need to get a bet down, can you bet it for me
here?
No,
there's none of that.
None of those?
There was none of that. No. I don't know what you're talking about. Nobody would do such a thing.
I would do it. If I knew someone going somewhere where they have some other markets available, I would do that as well. It's not just if I'm currently unavailable to bet currently, wherever I may be and wherever you may be. We appreciate you listening. SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the Visa Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. Now, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line is a man that I hold near and dear to my heart. We were former podcast partners on a very short-lived baseball podcast, which is still available, by the way. I think if you search our names, it's
awesome
one of the first things that pops up.
Yeah.
We had a good time. What did we call that, by the way? I'm sure Burke remembers.
Do not remember.
We called it Double Play. That's what we called it, Double Play. Neither of us wanted that name, by the way, but he's Adam Burke. He's VSiN's managing editor. He does all the great work on the website that you guys read every single day, and he joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. I mean, it was about this time every Monday we were recording that podcast, Burke. I do miss it, and I do miss seeing your face, so thrilled to see you with us here early in the morning. Before we get to your actual baseball bets, I want to run some stuff by you. The Chicago White Sox, how are we feeling about the way they're playing baseball? Over the last month, one of the best offenses, if not the best offense in baseball. Is this sustainable? Because I'm looking at a few markets. They're 4.5 to 1 to make the playoffs, which is a long shot, but they're also only 10 to 1 to have the fewest wins on the season, which feels like a dichotomy of situations. Do you believe what the White Sox is doing is real?
You know, I think to some degree there is a little bit of sustainability here. I mean, you know, they've had some prospects come up over the last, you know, 12 calendar months or so that have been, you know, putting up professional level plate appearances, which is something that this team didn't have, you know, a couple of seasons ago. But the biggest thing here this season is how much the pitching staff has improved. Noah Schultz is interesting guy, tough matchup if you rarely see him. Big, tall left-hander, got really, really good stuff. Davis Martin has been terrific so far. Sean Burke has even had his moments. No relation, by the way. And even, you know, Eric Fetty's kind of gone out there and been all right for this team. So, you know, because their pitching staff is so much improved, and I think a lot of that has to do with the changes that they made on the coaching staff specifically, bringing in the Royals' longtime bullpen coach as their pitching coach. Royals have generated a lot of really good relievers, a lot of good starting pitchers, too. Now that's kind of rubbing off on the White Sox here. And look, this division stinks. I mean, it's a pillow fight. I keep calling it a pillow fight, and that may be generous. So I think the White Sox definitely have more staying power than I would have expected. And shame on me for not being high on this team like some people were coming into the season.
Adam, I'll ask you about another division here before we get to your plays. And at least we see the Phillies and Mets playing some better ball here recently. Is this a sell high time on the Braves, buy low on either the Mets or Phillies, or any specific bets out there that you would want to make on any of those teams?
Yeah, I kind of wonder if maybe the window has passed a little bit on the Phillies because they are playing well now. They've been playing very well since Don Mattingly took over for Rob Thompson. And I'm not saying that Rob Thompson was the problem. You had a bunch of guys with track records who just weren't performing, you know, both on the pitching side and on the hitting side. Those guys are starting to perform now, and all of a sudden this team looks a lot different. I don't know about the Mets still. I have so many concerns about them. And Clay Holmes, even though he was a massive regression candidate, pretty big deal with that injury for him because Kodai Senga has a tough time staying healthy. Rest of the rotation's kind of lacking a little bit, I think. So, you know, that's going to be a big loss for them. But as far as the Phillies go, they're the one team, I think, right now that can run down the Braves. The Nationals won't do it. The Marlins won't do it. And I don't know if the Mets will do it either. So maybe there's still a little bit of equity in taking Philadelphia, but I think that price kind of bottomed out already, and now we're kind of picking up some of the scraps.
I don't hate the 5-1 to win the division, though, Burke. I don't hate. They're -160 to make the playoffs. They're 9-1 to win the NL. I don't know if I like that. I want to throw this one by you because maybe you see something in the numbers that I don't, as that's your expertise. Zach Wheeler, he's coming off the thoracic outlet surgery, which in the past was like a career ender for guys like Matt Harvey. His version of the surgery, I think, based on what I read, wasn't as bad as some of those other guys. He's off to a great start now. 31 and two-thirds innings, 30 strikeouts, a sub-2 ERA. He had 8 strikeouts against Pittsburgh on Sunday. I took a little flyer 50-1 for him to be the NL Cy Young, just based on the track record, and he looks pretty healthy. Do you think there's enough there for Wheeler to be in contention there?
Yeah, you know, it's really tough, right? Because, I mean, that surgery is not Tommy John. We kind of know what to expect nowadays with pitchers who have Tommy John surgery. And that's not to say that their recoveries are linear or anything like that, or that there are no setbacks, but it's just such a commonplace procedure now that we can kind of project that out a little bit better. With what Wheeler had, it's a procedure that not really a lot of guys have. So it's kind of difficult to sort of, you know, project this thing out into the future. That being said, as you mentioned, he's been really good already. He's a guy who the control is already there. The command is already there. The two things that he's really been known for throughout the course of his career. And also, this is a guy who's been a bridesmaid in that NL Cy Young voting several times over now. And he's had a really, really good career. And quite frankly, I think he should be a Hall of Famer when all is said and done. Maybe the voters look at him and say, you know what, this guy coming back from this and still being as good as he usually is, yeah, let's go ahead and give him one. Let's give him his flowers. I don't think that that's a bad bet at all, especially if you think the Phillies can run down the Braves, because if they can, Wheeler is going to be a big part of it and probably going to have some of those signature moments the rest of the way.
All right, Adam, you got a trio of plays for us here to go over. We'll start with Rangers at Rockies. Rockies, home dog here, about plus 132 at home, plus 130, plus 132. Rangers minus 145, favorites coming in. Total set 9.5. Where are you looking at this one?
Yeah, weather's been crazy in Denver here. You know, they had a game snowed out on their previous homestand. They came home. Their first home game on this homestand was 80 degrees. And then now it's going to be in the 40s with a chance of rain. So not going to be a fun night for offense or for these two pitchers, probably, in Mackenzie Gore and Jose Quintana. For Gore, though, I think it's a little bit more problematic because he gets a lot of swings and misses on chases, loves to throw that curveball for swing and miss, probably not as effective of a pitch, not only just because of the elevation and what it does to the baseball, but it's probably going to be tough to get a really good grip on it here tonight. Gore's a guy who's got significant walk rate issues, you know, a guy who's a fly ball pitcher, big spacious outfield here, even if the ball's not going to carry, still a lot of ground to cover at Coors Field. So I think the Rockies are worth a shot here tonight as a dog. The Rangers have been awful against left-handed pitching all season long. Quintana's got some ugly signs in the profile, but he's crafty, man. He's keeping guys off balance. He's not giving up a lot of hard contact. Rangers aren't hitting lefties anyway. I figure Colorado's worth a shot here in that plus 130 range you mentioned.
Yeah, Texas can't hit, and I'm not sure even Coors Field can solve their issues right now. He's Adam Burke, VSiN's managing editor. He's in charge of everything on the website. Check him out on X, at Skating Tripods. Let's go to your next game, the A's on the road in Anaheim. JT Ginn taking on Urena. Plus 108, the Angels are at home. Minus 131 with the A's. Total in the game is 9. It feels like the bottom is really starting to fall out for the Angels, which is saying something. They've lost 6 in a row. You're going to back the A's. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, 6 in a row, what, 8 of 9, 21 of 26 in the loss column for the Angels here. They just don't enjoy coming to the ballpark right now. You know what I mean? I saw their fans were wrangling possums in the upper deck that were kind of hanging out under seats over the weekend. It's an S show. I mean, I wish I could say the word for more emphasis, but that's all it is here with the Angels right now. I mean, you got a lame duck manager. You got a lame duck GM. I don't even know what Artie Moreno is going to let him do in terms of trading people away at the trade deadline here and kind of trying to retool this thing. But nobody has fun coming to the ballpark for this team. A's coming off of a really bad game yesterday against the Giants, had 3 errors. Bullpen really just completely fell apart in the late innings there after Jeffrey Springs was pretty good again. Right, the A's come back motivated here in this game. I don't know if the Angels ever show up to the ballpark motivated at this point in time, but JT Ginn's a guy I like quite a bit. 312 ERA, 384 expected ERA, induces a lot of soft contact. He's had a couple of games with a high walk rate, but for the most part, he's been really good at throwing strikes. And for Walbert Urania, solid pitcher, good stuff, 22 years old, throws really hard, but the A's are just far and away the better offense in this game. The Angels are bottom 5 offense in a lot of metrics. I'll lay the price with Sacramento here today. Lay that price around $1.30.
Yeah, the feral cats take over the Oakland Coliseum. You got possums there in the Angels game. What a battle between two fine ball clubs. All right, one last one, Burke. We got Giants at the Diamondbacks. Where are you looking here?
Yeah, so Robbie Ray is doing what Robbie Ray does, right? A lot of strikeouts, a lot of walks, a lot of soft contact, not a lot of hits, but he's given up 10 home runs in his 9 starts here so far. But he's only given up 18 runs in total. So yeah, he's a guy who gives up the long ball, but most of them are solo shots or maybe a 2-run shot. You have the chance to come back from something like that. And this is a big price for Zach Gallen. I mean, Zach Gallen's last 3 starts, 17 runs on 19 hits, 12 strikeouts, 7 walks. He doesn't look right. Stuff doesn't look good. I'll take the Giants here. I mean, offensively, they've been playing a lot better of late. Also 4th in home runs in the last 14 days. So maybe they scratch out a couple against Gallen today.
That's Adam Burke. Read him over at VSiN.com and on X at Skating Tripods. Burkealicious, it was great to see you. We'll chat soon, my friend.
Take care, boys.
All right, we've got a game 7 on the ice tonight, and Kelly and I may have combined to create the best bet possible. We'll share that with you coming up next on ANG.